This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Peter Long. Peter is the CEO of MCH, or MCH Strategic Data. Peter, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Mark. I'm honored to be here.
I'm pleased to have you. I don't know why we haven't done this before, but we'll definitely do it again. Let's start off by telling the listeners what exactly MCH, who MCH is, and what it does.
MCH is we're a 75-year-old business. We are the leading compiler of institutional data in the United States. Institutional data is defined as sort of, I'll call it this, the sub-governmental education, healthcare, city government, and some other things like religious, which doesn't sort of fall into the government space, but operates in a lot of the same way that these institutional markets do. So we kind of see the world as a B2B market, a B2G market, and a B2I market, and the I being institution, and they operate a little bit differently.
Okay. Cool. So give us a rough thumbnail of your typical clients. Who uses this data, and what is the data that you provide?
Sure. Well, we have a wide range of clients. Obviously, anybody that's trying to reach educators or people in the healthcare profession or anything, so everything from school supply and computer manufacturers, office supply companies, use it for marketing purposes. We also have a division that works with the government, mostly in the emergency response arena, Department of Homeland Security type operations. Want to know where hospitals and ambulance, police, fire, schools, nursing homes, daycares, all that kind of stuff, critical infrastructure, and first responders, so location-based services. So that's our two primary markets that make up most of our revenue. We have some analytical type markets where they want to use the data to do analysis on market size and market penetration, things like that. So our database is around 1.5 million institutions with about 10 to 12 million individuals that work at those institutions. So our kind of claim to fame is very accurate, rich, compiled data. We are one of the few primary source compilers left in the United States. So we are actually calling, for example, every hospital in the country two times a year and surveying them and getting the information ourselves have a lot of names at a particular hospital. For example, we might have 90 titles, you know, who's head of orthopedics, who's head of the emergency room, who's head of pediatrics, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of data. We have all the teachers in America, all the district administrators, you know, all the people that work at City Hall, that kind of thing. So, you know, kind of very rich data.
Now, when you say primary source compiler, it does mean you're contacting each institution separately as opposed to gleaning the data from phone books and other semi-publicly available sources, right?
That's correct. I mean, every list is a little bit different in terms of the approach, in terms of how we get and update the data, but phone verification is probably 80 or 85% of what the approach is. We do use the web and do web research and things like that. So there's a number of different ways that we'll come by the source data. But you know, the industry to a certain extent has moved towards combinations of customer files. You know, so it's commonplace in our marketplace and with some of the companies that you're familiar with, because I've been at trade shows with you. So where they'll take 100 customer files from various people and merge them all together and create a marketplace. But that underrepresents the totality. So our, you know, what we're trying to do is get 100% coverage across the market. So we're pretty sure we have every single hospital, for example, in the United States, every single school, and that's important, particularly in only in security applications and stuff. So
right, it's also pretty important for the mailers and other vendors who are trying to target those institutions, although for radically different reasons.
Right. Exactly.
So, so penetration of the education market. Well, let's cut it a slightly different way. I've known you guys, and we've spoken together several times over the last, I don't know, 7-8 years anyway.
Right.
Prior to meeting you, I hadn't heard it referred to as B2I, business to institution marketing. So get a little bit granular here on what makes the B2I market different from B2G and B2B, and start with a B2B question.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's a great question because it's fundamental. The interesting thing is I think we are really probably the people that discovered this market in terms of it being thought of as a separate market. There are a lot of differences in the way institutions operate than the way a business operates, and those play very, very fundamentally in how you approach or how you market to them. So let's just kind of, you know, rattle a few things off. There's, by the way, there's whole courses on this that we do in classes, so I could talk for easily an hour and a half on this topic alone. But you know, businesses tend to be profit driven. Institutions are mission driven or purpose driven. Businesses are competitive. Institutions typically collaborate. You can always point to some differentiations in that and say, well, maybe not in this case, but you know, for the most part, they're collaborative. Businesses sell you something. Institutions tend to serve the public, so their goal is to provide an education, or that's where religion comes into this. You know, the churches, you know, mm-hmm. to provide your spiritual health or whatever. So they're really trying to accomplish a higher goal. You know, institutions typically spend every dollar of their budget, so they are given, it's kind of the use it or lose it mentality. A school district or a school, or you know, even a nonprofit hospital will have something in their goal is to take the money and to utilize it to accomplish their mission, where obviously businesses are profit driven and want to come in under budget and do things. So recession resistant, they tend to spend taxes instead of pay taxes, credit worthy. Oftentimes there can be monopoly. They don't have a lot of competitors. Just depends on the vertical, but and they're politically influenced, and that's really where the leap over to the, you know, the quasi governmental is what I call them. But you know, the federal government frequently enacts policies, and when they want those policies pushed out to the public, it really goes frequently through institutions. So everything from the new healthcare bill, which will affect doctors and hospitals and everything else, to No Child Left Behind, your federal mandate gets pushed down through all the school districts, and the money from the federal government gets pushed down. So there's a tremendous amount of money. It's about a $4 trillion marketplace. That's with a T. So it makes up about a third of the gross domestic product of the United States. So from a marketer's perspective, it's a huge marketplace. And the dynamics that drive purchasing and how they operate are different from businesses, and therefore you've got to take a slightly different approach to marketing to these if you want to be highly successful.
Cool. Hold that, and we'll get on the B2G issue on the other side. My guest is Peter Long. Peter is the CEO of MCH. You can find them at mchdata.com. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down walls and enabling face-to-face communication regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg, now a part of Cisco, developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
Hey, Caps fans, are you ready for the total Caps experience? The Capitals Convention returns on Saturday, October 2nd at the Washington Convention Center in downtown D.C. Spend a full day immersed in Capitals hockey with players, coaches, management, and alumni. Get players' autographs and learn more about their lives both on and off the ice. And be the first to see the 2011 Winter Classic uniforms. Tickets are $45 for adults and $25 for kids. Last year's convention sold out with over 5,000 guests, so get your tickets now at WashingtonCaps.com.
Cellist Yo-Yo Ma, one of the great stars of classical music, enthralls audiences all over the world with his passion and artistry. When it comes to picking a cello, he tends toward Italian instruments made in the 18th century. When it comes to a timepiece, however, he favors an instrument crafted in Switzerland, the Rolex Datejust. Since Rolex introduced the first self-winding calendar wristwatch in 1945, the Datejust has become one of the most sought-after models in the Oyster line. With its classic Oyster design and magnified date window, the Datejust is every bit as distinctive as the master cellist who wears it. To see the Datejust and a complete selection of other Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Today's Emergency Preparedness Series is brought to you by the D.C. Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency.
If you have to call 911, would fire or police be able to find you? It's extremely important that your address numbers are clearly visible from the street. Another way to help first responders, if you have a flat roof, paint your street number on it so police and helicopters can pinpoint your location. When emergency arises, time is of the essence. Don't let a few numbers be the cause of an unnecessary delay. I'm Mark Seagraves.
The first day of school for D.C. public school students is August 23rd. Parents and guardians, make sure your children's immunization records are up to date. The Center for Disease Control recommends influenza vaccination as the first and most important step in protecting against the flu. As flu season begins, remember that in addition to vaccination, the best way to prevent the spread of contagious diseases like H1N1 is to cover your cough, wash your hands, and stay home if you're sick. For information on school immunization requirements and H1N1, call 311 or doh.dc.gov.
We're used to antibacterial soap, sprays, and such, but how do you know you've killed everything dangerous? Even better might be products that spot disease-causing germs.
It's relatively easy to kill things. What's not out there is detecting things, proving that you've killed everything dangerous.
Robert Pelton, a chemical engineer at Canada's McMaster University, leads a team of researchers attaching biosensors to paper.
You want to find dangerous bacteria in a sea of friendly ones.
Labs do it with sensitive chemicals and equipment. The trick is making a product that can last on grocery shelves.
A simple paper towel that you could just wipe across the surface that would perhaps change color if it detected something that was dangerous.
Other applications might include face masks or meat wrappers. For more about this story, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What's the buzz in the federal community? Chris Dorbeck knows it. Join Chris for his new show, The Dorbeck Insider, weekday afternoons 3 to 7 on Federal News Radio AM. Chris has the insights on who's coming and who's going, new memos, new contracts, fun and helpful ways for federal managers to improve agency productivity while meeting mission goals. The Dorbeck Insider, building federal community by connecting people. Weekday afternoons on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest is Peter Long. Peter is the CEO of MCH. You can find him at mchdata.com. Peter, we were talking about the differences between the business to institution market and B2B, which you covered at the end of the last segment. Are there further differences between the B2I and business to government?
Well, sure. I mean, obviously you're the king in the B2G space, and you know, I don't think I could probably provide your listeners more information than what you've given in that space. But you know, dominated by GSA schedules and the government credit cards and the purchasing, you know, bureaucracy and all the, you know, RFPs and bidding and different things. So you know, there's a whole process that you have to go through to work in that space, the federal government space. when you start to knock it down to the next level, say the state, and then even a further level, a county, and then city, some of those policies are found all the way through, but they tend to reduce in scope and complexity, and they start to merge a little bit closer on the business side with, you know, the promotions. But the big thing that we talk to our clients about, and we're not a creative ad agency, but there are large differences in vernacular when you're in the B2G and the B2I space over the B2B. So
definitely. I have a new book coming out in January, Selling to the Government. The biggest part of the book is the glossary.
Right, exactly. And you know, when you have a promotion piece that talks about return on investment or profits, you know, hey, our product will help give you a better ROI, all those things. Those are terms that don't really mean a lot to a school or a church or even the federal government. What they want to do is accomplish their mission. You know, they if it's a school, it's, you know, how do I improve the outcome for the kids? You know, how do I give them better education? If it's the police department, how do I protect the public? And so there's a whole, almost a whole nother course, if you will, sort of talking about how do you speak to these markets in terminology that makes them feel comfortable with you as an organization, that you get it, that you understand what they're about. And typically marketers really, if they blow it, this is where they blow it. They tend to send a single B2B marketing piece out, and they may mail some things into schools and in different places, but if they've got the wrong cover, the wrong wording, the wrong language, everything else, they miss a golden opportunity, because it's all about grabbing the attention of somebody and having somebody relate that your company understands what they are trying to do.
Right. You're not going to build a relationship unless you speak the language.
Exactly.
So, and that you're exactly right. Every time I grab a new client, the first thing is, you know, out of my mouth is, you know, do you understand the culture here and do you speak the language?
Exactly. And we talk about, you know, that you know, you have things in, you know, just words, business words, revenue, profit, process improvement, return on investment, productivity, non-compete agreements, the bottom line. You know, these are all kind of words that we all use every day when we talk to our employees and our clients and stuff. You know, when you get into an institution, it's really oath of office, endowment, policy, stewardship, encumbrance, you know, the government, you know, there's lots of different terminology. So even the way they do accounting, you know, the cash-based accounting and things like that is totally different, and the encumbrances, and that the funds have to be allocated for something ahead of the purchase and stuff. So it's the fund accounting, you know, the whole fund accounting methodology is very different. So there's a lot of subtleties, and I don't want to scare, you know, the smaller companies away. It's not as complicated as you would think, but you have to be respectful of it, I guess is the...
Well, you've got to understand there's a learning curve to coming into any market, and I personally believe the learning curve coming into B2G or B2I is somewhat longer.
Right. So. Right, and fewer people do it. So the companies that actually make the effort and do something about it really win. I mean, there's been a lot of money, obviously, with the stimulus money and everything, you know, flowing through the institutional market and the government, and you know, the people that have figured out how to adopt their strategy to take that, and I think the institution market may be a stepping stone toward the government market, because the government market is even more intense with the vernacular and all the scheduling and all the things that you need to know how to do it right to get into it. So we may be the light version of that. You may start there and then go into the feds.
But you know, it doesn't matter. You and I have both done this long enough to have been you know, almost a proud papa of certain companies, going from total novice to a significant player, and it's always fun to see one of your clients get there.
Exactly.
And you know, it's again just like being a proud papa. You know, I love telling stories of companies that I've had the privilege to work with over the years who you know, you see the light go on at a certain point, and then the rubber hits the road, and man, ain't no stopping them.
And that's definitely the case in the institution market, when people start making these, what I sometimes term as just minor changes, and you look at something and say, well, that's not that big a deal, and all of a sudden see, you know, the big results that it achieves, you know, who you market to, when you market, and what you say are kind of the big things, and they're all different than the business market timing. In other words, you know, cleanup spending at the institution market and new budget spending occurs typically at a different time of year than a typical for-profit business. Most companies are 12/31
right.
year-end type businesses.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of institutions are 6/30 or September 30th year-ends, and those play into the factor about, you know, when you market to them and mm-hmm. then how you get on their radar screen. And then obviously what I said, the vernacular and how you approach sending your marketing materials in terms of what you say so that they feel like you understand their space. And then who is the decision maker, which is another whole topic in itself, which is a little bit tricky.
You know, yeah, and we're definitely going to get there. But, you know, we both worked with a number of catalog companies over the years. And a lot of the catalog companies like to double up, so they would mail in October, November to capitalize on the holiday season. And my big push was move your mail date 6 weeks back, get out, you know, mid-August at the latest and capture end of FY for federal, or at least segment that part of the list. And, you know, they'd get in touch with me 6 months later after they did it and say, well, we finally tabulated the results. And, gosh, you were right.
Exactly. And that's exactly when you look at a school district, for example, and if you're selling pens or pencils or office supplies and everything, and it's amazing some of the major office supply retailers that do just exactly what you said. They send a big book out in October. They miss the whole back-to-school season. I mean, you know, school starts in October and early September for, you know, 95% of the country. And, you know, you need to be dropping now. You know, August
right.
1st, if you're one of these people and be getting in there so that when the teacher comes back and wants to outfit their classroom, you're there. You need to change your cover from a corporate view to showing school desks and some kids. And mm-hmm. so it relates. But, and that's just one of the, you know, that kind of the education market. And similar, schools will hold back money, particularly if they think there's going to be financial problems. And then at the end of the year, they race to spend it just like the government does. And so you'll have all this cleanup spending that will happen in May sometimes. So we've found that where a lot of people are saying, well, the schools are closing down, they're not going to be spending anything because they're out of session in 4 weeks or 3 or 4 weeks. You know, the people that actually, you know, put a book in there, you'll find out they got all kinds of extra money, and the teachers are told, you know, hey, we got a couple of extra $1,000 we got to get rid of so that we don't get our budget cut, because they're afraid if they don't use it, then the district or the legislature will say, you know, hey, we'll just take it back. If you don't need it, you know, we'll reallocate it, particularly this budget. So.
Yeah, and the flip side of that is if they don't use it, obviously they didn't need that much, so they're possibly going to get less in subsequent budget years.
Exactly. I'll just get, there's a quote from I have here in front of me hanging on my wall. It's from the University of Kansas, which, you know, we're in Kansas City, or so we're kind of a Jayhawk fan, but the administration issued a press release, and it said, you know, we have the authority to carry these funds forward into the next fiscal year, meaning their budget is their under budget figures. However, that makes the carry forward very visible and very tempting for the legislature or the governor to sweep it up. For this reason, we have not used our carry forward authority, and we do not wish to do so and risk losing funds. That's directly on their website. I always throw that out for everyone. This is a perfect example of, you know, I can't imagine telling my employees that, you know, we made a whole bunch of profit and it's near the end of the year. Please go spend all of it so I don't make any money, you know.
That's the reality of the situation, though.
That is the reality. You know, the universities, the schools and everything, their goal is to spend it all, you know, make sure they have nothing left so that they get that same allocation next year. And that's just one of the fundamental differences. But it drives different decisions in the marketing process, and that's what's important.
We'll pick that up on the flip side. My guest is Peter Long. Peter is CEO of MCH. You can find him at mchdata.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about the decision-making process for purchasing at the B2I level. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This federal government update is brought to you by the U.S. General Services Administration.
Things are looking up for the federal IT workforce. 29% of government IT managers say they plan to hire additional staff over the next 6 months. That's up 9 percentage points since April. According to the latest CDW IT Monitor Index, the outlook is even brighter in the private sector. 37% of IT decision makers at large companies anticipate hiring additional staff. The survey shows IT budgets on the rise as well. Over half of the federal managers surveyed expect expect their budgets to increase by the end of the year.
GSA provides government agencies with customized acquisition, project management, and financial management solutions for complex IT projects and professional services. To learn more, visit gsa.gov/aas/options. That's gsa.gov/aas/options. Or call 877-472-4441. That's 877-472-4441. GSA, your everything source for IT and professional services solutions.
This week's half-price DC offer is Tutto Bene in Arlington. $50 worth of freshly made Italian food for just $25.
Experience the authentic taste and traditional Italian cuisine in Tutto Bene's spacious new dining room.
Perfect for rehearsal dinners, wedding receptions, business gatherings, and, of course, a delicious lunch or romantic dinner. Sports fans, watch your favorite teams in high definition while enjoying happy hour specials.
$25 gets you $50 to spend at Tutto Bene. Buy your half-price gift certificate today while supplies last at half-price DC.
How is the New York City Department of Environmental Protection using innovation to protect, collect, and deliver water to over 8 million people? What about the city's efforts to be greener and make its operation more sustainable? And how is New York City ensuring its water system is viable for the next 100 years? Listen next week as these topics and more will be explored with Cass Holloway, Commissioner of the New York City Department of Environmental Protection. Join host Michael Keegan next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Arming your home security system gives you peace of mind. But are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in home monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems and pay just $18.95 a month. And there's no cost to switch. Why Ackerman? Ackerman has over 40 years of industry-leading experience. Ackerman monitors your home from its UL and CSAA 5 Diamond Certified Monitoring Center. Ackerman was recently recognized as the National Dealer of the Year from over 30,000 companies. Get the most qualified professionals monitoring your home for just $18.95 per month. And Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Over 180,000 people enjoy peace of mind with Ackerman. Federal employees, call today and get 4 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service. Call 888-999-1070, 888-999-1070, or visit AckermanSecurity.com.
A recent case involves an assault on a federal officer. When FBI responded to the scene, they learned
there was a shooting incident involving a Border Patrol agent along Interstate Highway 35 near Laredo, Texas.
Special Agent Jason Hodge from FBI San Antonio. At the scene, the Border Patrol officer observed 10 suspected undocumented aliens entering the subject's vehicle. The officer provided a command that the subject ignored. The subject accelerated the vehicle, hitting the officer.
We charged him with assaulting a federal agent.
Several theories of what happened at the scene were considered, but after tests were conducted,
there were no issues with a weapon. The injuries that the Border Patrol agent suffered were consistent with being struck by a car.
In a situation like this, there can be multiple dangers.
Not only for the alien smuggler, for the people that he's trying to transport, for any agents that may be present, also to the general public, because if they're trying to merge onto a busy highway.
The subject, a citizen of El Salvador illegally residing in the U.S., received over 4.5 years in federal prison. I'm Denise Ballou of the Bureau on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Have Federal News Radio headlines delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest is Peter Long. Peter is the CEO of MCH. MCH provides strategic data to companies selling to business and institutions, local governments, schools, healthcare, religious institutions, and more. Peter, let's talk about those decision makers at the B2I institutions. So, who are they? How do we influence them?
Sure. Well, you know, one of the big differences from a B2B market to the B2I market is that your customer in the B2I market is the worker, you know, and typically your customer in the B2B market is the business owner. If it's a small business, it's the business owner or the manager. So, you know, when you talk to salespeople that are selling computer equipment, whatever it might be, you know, they're typically trying to hit the department manager at a business or a business owner and influence them into picking your company. In the institutional market, it's the teachers, it's the doctors, it's the practitioners that typically use most of the most of the resources and influence the decision making, although they tend not be the people that actually purchase the product, because that goes through a bureaucratic process of filling out purchase orders and you know, making sure you're dotting all your I's and crossing your T's and get to quotes or bids and all these types of things. So there's a purchasing agent, you know, that typically executes the purchase. But we've done an awful lot of research in this area, and we've found that, you know, the practitioners in these locations either flat out pick the product that they want or certainly, you know, significantly influence. Now, if you're talking about something like copy paper, or, you know, photocopying paper or something, that may be, because it's very, very generic, that may be a low-cost thing. But almost anything else, they can name brands and different things that they want. And that typically is what's executed, unless it's a really large expense, you know, $25,000, $50,000 or something, where they feel like they really need to go out and get, you know, RFPs or quotes or something. But so, you know, there's a huge opportunity to, you know, really hit the practitioners and get them to request your product. And that's really one of the things that, or, you know, our data supports with all the people that we have on there and the decision makers, but also our training, our advice that we give to our clients is that, you know, typically they'll use response files, for example, and a lot of those have the purchasing director at a particular organization as the contact name, because that's who actually either receives the goods or is on the billing statement. They're not really the people that are making the purchasing decisions. They're just executing the decisions. So if you send them a catalog, it's not wrong to send them the catalog, but that won't necessarily get you the business. You'll get a lot more business from sending it to the people that influence the product decisions. And so you know, we spend a lot of time with our clients trying to analyze what their product is and where the fit is and who is the right audience and then who really uses the product. And, of course, in an institution setting, then trying to hit those people that are the actual users of the product, which in the institution case is the lowly worker, which in a factory is a guy putting a nut on a car or something. But in a hospital, it's a nurse or a doctor or school, it's a teacher, it's a police officer on the ground, a firefighter, and they're all highly educated, highly paid, and highly skilled, and have strong opinions about product choices and have a lot of influence in what gets ultimately used.
Right. And I couldn't agree more regarding the purchasing people. They tend to be more in the reactive mode than in the proactive mode. If somebody walks in and asks, you know, we need copy paper, we need X number of computers, if they happen to have your catalog, great. But, you know, it's the reactive mode. How much research have you done on local governments buying local as opposed to from national vendors? Is that a big issue? Because I hear it, but I don't often see it.
I would agree with you. I mean, we have there is quite a bit of information on our website under the resource section. We pretty much just
there's a ton of information at your website.
Yeah, so you know, people that really want to take deeper dives into some of these topics, there's material out there. But the
mchdata.com.
Right. I think it depends on the city. It depends on the size of the purchase and how unique it is, or what, you know, so there's a lot of factors that fall into it. But I would, you know, certainly we always say to everybody, test. I mean, you know, don't assume anything, you know, just because you heard that, oh, they won't buy my product because they only buy something locally, you know. Well, I show me the evidence, but, you know, because I agree with you. I mean, we've found that, you know, some local people have far more authority to buy much more expensive products than even state or federal government. So you'd sort of think a federal government department might have they have a huge budget, but they've got a lot of bureaucracy, I guess is what I'm saying. And so
right.
Local towns can buy up to $25,000 worth of goods, and just maybe they need to get one other price quote just to make sure that they're not getting had, but they just call and get it. It's not like they need an RFP or any bureaucracy. You don't need a GSA schedule. You don't need all this other stuff, you know. So that's why I called it sort of the government light. You know, you don't necessarily need to have as many bona fides as selling to the federal government, for example. So
now, what you just mentioned the $25,000, the government federal credit card micro purchase level is $3,000, but we all know that certain cards have significantly higher per purchase capabilities. What's the scoop on state and local use of plastic of credit cards for purchases?
Yeah, I don't know if I know the answer to that particular question, but I do know that there is a lot of discretion, and it once again, it just totally varies. You kind of have to look at, you know, each individual city. You know, some will have $5,000 is the most that can be spent without getting additional quotes or whatever. Mm-hmm. Some it can be as much as $25,000. It's a wide band, sort of surprising. You'd think there'd be more uniformity, but there really isn't. I don't know the actual adoption of credit cards per se at the local, you know, like city or county level. I am sure that it is pretty prevalent because it's such an efficient way to account for things. But we don't have any statistics that we've done. It's a kind of an interesting thought. Maybe we should do a survey or something.
Well, NASPO used to have data on that, and then you know, it kind of stopped, I guess, because there's just so many different cities and counties out there. I mean, we're talking 90,000 governments in the country. That's a lot of government.
Right. You know, if you're looking at every department and sub-department and that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, so there's 3,800 counties or something like that in the United States. Mm-hmm. I think that's right. And
10, what was it? Is it like 10,000 plus school districts?
Yeah, there's about 16,000 actually. Yeah. 15,000 school districts, right, and about 120,000 total schools. That's with private schools in there. You take the private schools out, you're at about 195 or 100,000 or something. So, there's big numbers. You know, there's a lot of opportunity, and there's a lot of opportunity to target. You would think maybe it's hard to target, but you've got wealthy school districts and poor school districts, and they operate very differently, and those types of things. So, you know, you can trim the numbers down and target to a very lucrative market pretty quickly.
And, you know, you used the T word earlier, $4 trillion, so it's not an insignificant market to look at. My guest is Peter Long. Peter's the CEO of MCH. You can find him at mchdata.com. I suggest you do that because there's a ton of data there. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Federal News Radio on 1500 AM.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
Using a cutting-edge process to form new joints inside the body, a team of researchers funded by the National Institutes of Health has successfully regenerated rabbit joints. The experiment demonstrates it's possible to grow dissimilar tissues, like cartilage and bone, taken entirely from the host's own cells. The regenerative procedure is performed by stimulating previously irreparable organs or tissues to heal themselves. The approach sidesteps several problems that are typically encountered in trying to transplant cells that are grown externally, such as tissue rejection. The replacement joints are infused with a protein to promote its own growth. The development means that total joint replacement in human arthritic patients may become possible. I'm Scott Carr.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
The Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com explores the hard issues surrounding cloud computing from the government's perspective, sharing with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the Fed Cloud blog on Twitter, sponsored by Intel and Cisco. Two technology companies leading the cloud revolution.
Hi, I'm Renthia Rost from GEICO. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington have been in our community more than 80 years. To ensure that the youth of today will be full partners in a better tomorrow, give a child the gift of a membership for 2010. And while you're at it, reach out and volunteer to mentor a child in your community. go to www.bgcgw.org and tell them the Gecko sent you. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. During the dog days of summer, we're reminded to stay healthy.
When you're hot, salad's really refreshing.
Harrison Wine is editor of the NIH News and Health newsletter. He reports that there are healthy eating opportunities that come with warmer weather.
And places like the D.C. area and probably most of the country, it's a lot easier to get fresh fruits and vegetables. You could also go to Pick Your Own Farms and get the kids involved and let them really know where their food comes from, and that makes it more likely they'll actually eat healthy foods.
He notes that there are more locally grown fruits and vegetables during the summer. For more summer eating tips, visit the NIH News and Health newsletter. It's online at newsandhealth.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
The Dorebeck Insider, hosted by award-winning journalist and free thinker Chris Dorebeck. Engage your mind every afternoon from 3 to 7 as Chris engages the best minds in federal procurement, management, IT, and human resources. The Dorebeck Insider takes on subjects critical for an efficient government. Chris's guests answer the questions you want answered. Tune in to hear how the news shapes your daily interactions in the federal space. The Dorebeck Insider, weekday afternoons from 3 to 7, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest is my friend Peter Long. Peter is the CEO of MCH. Find them, please find them, at mchdata.com. It'll be time well spent if you spend a little time scouring their website. There is a ton of really, really good information there. Peter, let's talk about budgets and, I get exasperated with the press because, you know, they're reporting on the stimulus, state and local budgets, et cetera, is all, even from, the press that we don't expect it from, it tends to be sensational. Give me your thoughts here.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I think there are some legitimate, serious problems in a couple of states, and of course that tends to dominate a lot of the press. California is the most notable, and New York, and a few places. And they're big states, and they're very important over to the overall economy. All the states are struggling a little bit, but one of the things that we found with some of our research over the year, and we produce a document called Budget Aware, the last one came out in April. We're about to release a new one, but it's on our website too, and we kind of look at things by state and track the money. And you know, in corporate world, when you sort of talk about differences between businesses and the institution, in the corporate world, when GM makes a decision to close a plant, that's a done deal. You know, when they release that to the press, it's over. In the institution world, they use the press to accomplish, I believe, a mission to stop stop an initiative. So you tend to hear a lot of sensational things from your local government people about cutting the police force or getting rid of the fire department, or we're going to close all the schools or whatever the high drama thing is. And of course that activates the public, and that's exactly what they want to happen. You know, you get everybody activated, calling, writing letters, doing things, and it changes the dynamic. And what we tend to find is what people think, or sometimes what's reported is going to be a shortfall, or how much money is going to be eliminated from a school budget, for example. When you go back 2 years, into the future, and you look back, either there was no cut at all, or the cut was very, very minor. So, historically, there's been a number of these, even from the lots of panic things like the Newt Gingrich closing the Department of Education and different things that we had tracked throughout time. And by and large, what you see is the budgets continually grow almost every single year. I do believe that this year, you will see some cuts, but I believe that the cuts will be much smaller than people expect. I mean, you hear things like, 15 or 20% cuts, and I think when you look historically back, you're going to see 3% cuts or 4% cuts or something, which is very manageable. So there's still a ton of money out there. There are some states that are doing quite fine, by the way, gas and oil states, places like, Montana, North Dakota, Utah, Oklahoma, they're not in dire straits. So not every place in the U.S. is a disaster. And, Interestingly enough, I just this morning got an email that the Senate is going to clear $26 billion to aid the states to keep teachers employed. So, you know, there's been enough outcry about, you know, cutting the education funding that the federal government's going to kick in more money. And that's typically what you find is that somehow or another more money comes up. They raise taxes. They put new fees in. They do a sales tax increase or something, and they end up keeping the spending there. So I'm not trying to make a political statement because for a lot of people who listen to your program,
that may not be
a good thing,
yeah.
But it is the reality. And it is from a business perspective, when you're trying to sell things, I think, like you said, you're hearing on the radio that there's no money out there at the state and local level. And that really is not the case. We're in a very small town outside of Kansas City, a place called Sweet Springs, and they just built a new school across the street from us. So, here's a little community in the worst economic turmoil we've seen in modern history, and they're building a new school. So, you know.
Well, that's because you're a member of the Sweetwater Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
And there you go. I knew that because I've scoured your website. but I agree. And you know, there's a tremendous amount of talk about the size of the federal deficit. But what people don't seem to grasp is if the government spends less money, that has a direct impact on the overall economy immediately.
Right. You know, the money comes back into the economy. The government is taking that money and they're spending it. So they're pushing the money into the economy. And then, of course, that comes back to them in tax revenues and everything else, because the people providing the products or selling the products get the money and have to pay taxes on it. So it's a complicated, you know, that's why I guess we have a federal, you know, a board of governors and all these smart people and economists that are trying to decide what's the right thing to do. But what I do know is that there's money out there, and I do know that they still continue to spend. And what I do know is that they've been told to spend because they want to keep the economies going. So this is not the case. You know, the stimulus money in particular had things in it that said it had to be spent by a certain time. They didn't want people to hoard it. The whole point was to stimulate the economy, you know.
Right.
So the money's out there.
Yeah,
you know?
And the issue is transparency. But before we wrap up, we've got 4 or 5 minutes left. Give companies some advice here on approaching the institutional market. Give them a few takeaways.
Sure. Well, I think the very first and most important thing is that institutions are important. You know, they're a $4 trillion marketplace. They're different than businesses. If you just even understand that, even if you don't know how they're different, just understand that they are different, and you have to take a slightly different approach if you want to be successful. That's important. The purchasing practice that they employ make it hard to find the right purchasing decision maker, so you need to spend a little bit of time thinking about your product and who uses it. And that's who you want to market to, not the person necessarily that's buying it. Your success to a certain extent is in finding those decision maker names, you know. And so our pitch obviously is that the compiled database is the most comprehensive way to achieve that. There are other ways, but you need to get the decision maker names. The organizations are large and they're complex, and you can't title slug, you know, light bulb buyer or something on your catalog and think it's going to get to the right place. You need a person's name, and you know, you've got to have an understanding of the purchasing cycle, you know, both budgeting and cleanup spending. You know, when do they start their budgets and how does your product fit in? Is it a large product that needs a lot of time to be budgeted, or is it a, you know, sort of a discretionary spending type thing that, you know, that could do just cleanup spending? And then when do you get your catalogs in there for that? So I think those are kind of some of the highlights. There is money. And by the way, there's a whole other year in the stimulus, and a lot of the states have quite a bit of money left in the stimulus budget. Some, by the way, don't. Some blew almost all the stimulus budget within the first year. You know, so you kind of need to look at where the money is going to. But there's quite a few that have 70% of it left or whatever, and they're going to be spending like crazy this year because they've got only 2 years to use it. So,
okay. Now, there's been some talk in D.C. about a second stimulus. Have you heard anything substantial about that?
Well, I mean, I think what I just quoted today out of the Senate, you know, it's coming. You know,
yeah.
$26 billion to the schools to keep teachers. So, you know, they're talking about extending more unemployment benefits and different things. So, I believe it'll happen. I mean, it's coming up on the election year. They want all feel like they're, you know, helping people and everything. And so, as long as, you know, I think what you'll find, it's going to be more targeted towards the common man, the school districts, the workers, the unemployment, I think, versus big bank bailouts. I don't think you're going to see any more. I don't think you're going to see much more support for giving large corporations big money to save themselves. But so I think that's over. But
yeah, not exactly great press from that one. So. But, Peter, thank you very much for joining me today. I greatly appreciate your time here.
Well, I appreciate and honored that I could be on the show, so thank you for this opportunity.
Great. You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center on 1500 AM. My guest has been Peter Long. Peter's the CEO of MCH. You can find them at mchdata.com. If you'd like to see Peter speak this fall, he will be speaking at the 7th Annual Summit on Selling Products to the Government on November 9th, an event that I happen to produce, and Peter is one of the sponsors of that event, but he was going to speak anyway. I don't know if I told you that before you sponsored or not. But you can find information on that at federaldirect.net. And remember, you have not been everywhere until you've been off-center with AmTower.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Okay, people, let's settle in. We've got a lot of slides to get through on our server utilization strategy. Okay, now this is an interesting
slide. Well, you've been here before. Somewhere in your agency, someone came up with a plan for data center efficiency.
Well, if you look here at the third bullet point, this is...
Actually, what they came up with is a presentation deck. You know, with underlined sections, bullet points, few animations, and sound effects. What's missing, of course, is how the job will actually get done. Because when the federal CIO says data center efficiency is a top priority, you need more than a slideshow. You need results. That's where Dell Services comes in. We've got over 30 years of experience delivering comprehensive, best-in-breed solutions. Whether that's virtualization, cloud computing, or business continuity, we're ready to listen, and we're ready to help you deliver. To learn more, go to Dell.com/deliver now.
How does one assure trust? As citizens, government, and business enterprise increase the amount of information that's shared online, fundamental questions arise around security requirements, data and identity management, and infrastructure. Trusted online environments can reduce costs, expand services, and are critical to protecting how and with whom information is shared. Securing identities and transactions is an essential component of building trusted online systems and a critical priority for both business and government. As online information sharing and collaborative services evolve between people and technologies, will trust emerge as the next killer app? Listen to a discussion on trust and the internet. Is trust the next killer app? As part of the Booz Allen Hamilton Expert Voices panel series, featuring top government and commercial experts who are leading the way in understanding trusted services and building secure online systems. August 12th at 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. For more information, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen, or visit the Expert Voices blog at boozallen.com/Expert Voices.
If you work for or have worked for the federal government, I want to tell you about an organization that's been around for over 80 years. It's NARF. Organized in 1921 to protect and enhance the retirement and health benefits of federal employees, NARF wants you to know that laws can change and so can your retirement security. Protect it by joining NARF, the only association that's dedicated to making sure your retirement is secure when you reach retirement. Don't wait until after you retire to join NARF. Check out their website at www.narfe.org. You'll see that NARF is a great investment for your retirement future. Then click on the Join Now button and join hundreds of thousands of federal retirees and employees as a NARF member. That's www.narfe.org. Or call 1-800-627-3394 and ask them to send you some information. Join now. NARF, your best.